Stardate, March 3rd. Well, it's nighttime outside right now, and the stars are up there. If you look up in the sky and you see things twinkling, those are usually stars. If you see things that are solid and bright, those are usually planets. There's nine planets. You can't see this one. We're on it. And there's also the sun, but that only comes out in the daytime. Stardate is presented every night, well, no, every Saturday night this time, and other times throughout the week. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm filling in for Joel Block this week, as Joel Block has taken a leave of absence. His tape was hijacked as it was coming across to this part of the country from wherever he does it. And Joel will be back soon, but not tonight. Sorry. Now it's time for Brain Damage, which is the program that comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 12 here on WUSB in Stony Brook. My name's Eric Corley, and they call it Brain Damage because we talk about those things that nobody else talks about. And very often in today's world, that's enough to label you as crazy. We also play music no one else plays, but we'll get more into that a little later. I suppose that's about enough of that music for now. In case anyone couldn't figure it out, that was an album, very rare album, which I found when I was over in Amsterdam earlier this year. Actually, that was last year, wasn't it? By Ron Geesin and Roger Waters. And we heard a couple of things called Our Song and Seashell and Stone. A lot of nice songs are on here, and we'll probably get back to it a bit later in the program. And including one song called Breathe, which, if you know Pink Floyd at all, they have another song called Breathe. And a couple of the lines are in this song, so it's... Since the album came out in 1970, it's 20 years old, folks. This album is 20 years old, and it's still ahead of its time. It's a sort of a good way to explain away something that people might think is a little too crazy. Songs like A Gentle Breeze Blew Through Life, The Womb Bit, Embryo Thought, Body Transport, Embryonic Womb Walk, Mrs. Throat Goes Walking, that kind of thing, you know? It's unusual. Anyway, we'll get back to more of that later on, but what's coming up underneath us right now is some music from Albania, which, as a few of you may know, we finally got through to Albania last week after many weeks of trying to successfully place a telephone call to Albania. For reasons unknown, perhaps we'll find out what those reasons are soon, it's impossible to make a call to Albania from the United States. However, when I journeyed over to Canada a couple of weeks ago, I was able to do it successfully and actually speak to somebody in Albania, and you'd never know it from the way it's portrayed in the media and the way you hear about it in mainstream life. The people over there are very much like people over here. You know, they talk, they smile, they laugh, all that kind of thing. Anyway, you might have caught an interesting letter in today's paper, today's New York Times. It happened to be about Albania. Entitled Attack on Albania. To the editor, The Last Domino, which was an editorial on January 26th, viciously attacks Albania. As one of a considerable number of Americans who have visited Albania over the years, I find it hard to enumerate all of your inaccuracies, distortions, falsehoods, and slanders. You say, refugees tell horrifying stories of savage repression, credible enough to justify the inquiry now underway by the UN Human Rights Commission. The United Nations is not now, nor has it ever, conducted an investigation into human rights abuses in Albania. The commission is meeting in Geneva with a long agenda of reports to discuss. None concern Albania. The Commission must pass a resolution before the United Nations investigates human rights abuses. Nothing of the kind has ever occurred pertaining to Albania. One must conclude that you are contributing to a widespread campaign to attack little Albania, overthrow its socialist regime, and replace it with Western-style, quote, democracy, unquote, as in Poland, Hungary, and Romania. You repeat the crude fabrication originating in Belgrade of a, quote, ruthless police crackdown, unquote, against dissenters in northern cities. Responsible tourists returning from that city, the city of Skodra, I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly, report that there never were such demonstrations or signs of dissenters, much less a crackdown. And as for the jitters in Tirana, no less subjective an observer than the Italian embassy in Tirana reported to its government that Tirana was normal and calm. I have traveled the length and breadth of Albania a number of times and have yet to see any people living in hovels. That letter was written by Jack Shulman of Brooklyn, and he publishes a newsletter about Albania, and we have Jack Shulman on the telephone with us. Good evening to you.
Hello, how are you?
And congratulations on getting your letter printed in the New York Times. Can you tell us something about the piece that you were responding to?
Oh, you mean the original editorial that...
Yeah.
That stimulated that letter.
Yeah, that's the, yeah. Tell us something about that. What it said and why it got you upset.
Well, let's see. It was really a shocker. It mentioned what was going on all over Eastern Europe, Poland and Bulgaria and East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Romania, and then it pointed out that Well, this democratic tide was going to sweep all over the world, and that there was one remaining Stalinist bastion, and that was Little Albania, and they were calling, practically agitating for it to be overthrown and join in the tide of Eastern Europe. And of course, in doing this, they got a lot of stories from, I would say, enemies of Albania, escapees, etc., who make a reputation for themselves in spreading lies and slanders. And the media, the press in general in the West is very prone to repeat these lies, even though they know that they're probably not true. So I was prompted to write a letter to the Times refuting some of these charges, and I'm not expecting it to ever be printed, and much to my surprise, they decided to print it.
Now, it says here that you publish a newsletter about Albania.
Yes.
Can you tell us something about that?
Well, it's very regular, and I do it all by myself. You know, I'm an old man, and I'm retired, and this is sort of a hobby with me. I've been doing this about 20 years now, and whenever I can get out an issue, I manage to do it with a mailing list. It is of interest to anyone who's interested in Albania and Balkan affairs and Near Eastern affairs and politics and socialism and questions like that.
Now, what is your tie to Albania? How did you develop this interest?
Well, just more or less accidentally, way back in 1957, I happened to run across one of the diplomats, a delegate to the United Nations from Albania. I didn't know anything about Albania at that time, but I met him at some party, some reception, and we got acquainted. He started telling me some things about Albania, and I was interested. As a result of more or less frequent getting together with them and talks, I began to read some material about the country and learn something about it. And I was fortunate enough by chance to be allowed to visit the country in 1961, which was an eye-opener for me. And since then, I have been there seven more times. The last time was November, I think. Yes, November 86, I think it was.
Now,
yes, 86.
That in itself is something that, if I understand correctly, is extremely rare for an American to actually be allowed to go to Albania.
Yes, it is rather unusual, but considering the circumstances at the time, the first time I went there, that was at the point where Albania and Russia broke off relations, and they were glad to welcome any friend from anywhere to come in at that time and look around the country and see for themselves what they were doing. So that I just happened to make an application to go to visit there at a strategic moment, and they allowed me to come in and to visit.
Now, was this before the warming with China?
Yes. It was just the time they were breaking off with the Soviet Union, and before they began to develop closer relations with China.
I see. Now, what kind of changes have you noticed over the years? So you said you were last there in 1986?
Yes. Uh-huh.
How has it changed up until this
point? Oh, well, every time I've been there, sometimes 2 or 3 years or 4 years go by, I've noticed a lot of development. There were growth in the cities, development of factories, industry, improvement in the agriculture, in the fields, better clothing for the people, and they they look, you know, more prosperous and affluent than they did the time before. There was constant improvement. And one thing I must say about going there, you get a very strange feeling, almost as though you're in a different world. The place is very quiet, very calm. There's no big rush. There's no traffic jams. Very few cars, as a matter of fact. People have command of the streets. There's no dirt or garbage around the streets. It's really a pleasure. The air is clear and clean. Of course, it's a mountainous country and near the ocean. It's very relaxing to be there. You lose a lot of your attention by being there. It's really something that's hard to explain.
Well, an article in the Times said that it was almost like going back a century.
There, well, that's quite an exaggeration, yes. It's true to a little extent that when the country at the end of World War II was liberated, they were rather backward. They were the most backward country economically and educationally, too, in Europe. But they've made so much progress now that it is fantastic. Let me enumerate some of the things they have accomplished in these 45 years since their liberation. There's no taxes at all on the people, none at all. There's no inflation, no price rises ever. The prices are controlled and stable. There's no unemployment. There are no homeless people there. Everybody is employed. Everybody is working. All medical care is free for everybody. A lot of endemic diseases of the past have been eliminated. There are no cases of AIDS. Before World War II, the lifespan of the Albanian was about 38 years. Now, it is up to 72 years. There's Social Security, old age pensions, disability, maternity benefits for everyone, free of charge. That includes industrial workers as well as farmers out in the country. All education is free, including university. There used to be a very high rate, about 90% of illiteracy before World War II, and there's practically none at all there now. There's no drug addiction. There's no beggars. There's no crime in the street. I have statistics on number of prisoners there are in the whole penal system, and it's amazingly low. There's no housing crisis. Rents are very low. There's no pollution. It has been prohibited by the Constitution. The industry is developing very, very well, steadily, at a slow pace, but very steadily. They are now self-reliant. They have no foreign debt whatsoever, nor any internal debt. And they have no budget deficits and no foreign trade deficits. Their budgets are always in balance because they are planned. And as far as isolation, there's a lot of talk that Albania is isolated. Well, they have relations with over 110 countries. They have trade relations with over 50 countries. They have commercial air flights from France, Italy, Switzerland, West Germany, East Germany, Greece, Hungary, Romania, and even charter flights on tours from London. And women have full equal rights, both all in economic, political, social, family life, and all national minorities have full rights with everyone else. And there's freedom of speech and assembly. All of which may be surprising to Americans who have been fed a lot of misinformation in the media constantly over the years.
Okay, I'm going to take you up on that last one about freedom of assembly and things like that. Could you go into that a little bit more?
Well, as I said, there have been charges and talk that there are abuses of human rights and violations of human rights in Albania, which is not true, and there have been no corroboration, no proof, and I have not seen anything at all to back up those charges. freedom of speech and assembly are guaranteed in the Constitution. Well, you might say every Constitution says that, but the question is, do they observe it? Well, as far as I could see, they do observe it. I saw no worries about anybody talking to me or to anybody else or to any other foreigners. As a matter of fact, there have been some reporters from the television networks, New York Times, etc., who have gone around the country recently and have reported conversations and talks with people, ordinary people off the streets, students coming out of the university buildings, and we have even seen shots of it on their camcorders. And there was no hesitation about them speaking freely to foreigners and obviously foreign reporters who were taking pictures, and they had no fear or worries at all about that, which is not true in many other countries.
Now, if there were some kind of a pro-democracy demonstration in Albania or any kind of a demonstration in Albania, how do you think that would be handled by the authorities?
Well, that's a very hypothetical question because, first of all, I can't picture a possibility of there being any such thing. All responsible and I would say conservative observers, visitors, diplomats, etc., affirm that there's no movement of dissenters or cries for democracy and freedom, etc., in Albania because there's no sentiment for it, no need for it. There's a feeling when you talk to people, they have as much democracy as anybody could wish for. And as far as anyone dreaming of organizing a demonstration or anything, well, that would be a big surprise to me if anything should ever occur that way. Now, enemies of Albania say, well, that's because their people are afraid. Well, I haven't. I've seen a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of people. I haven't seen any kind of fear in anybody's face or anybody's action about anything.
Well, there's talk that, and this is purely from what I read in newspapers, that religion is outlawed in Albania. Now, is that true?
Well, partly true. It isn't exactly outlawed as such, but organized religious bodies, institutions, like organized church, etc., do not exist in Albania, and that's mainly by the desire of most of the people who have been weaned away from religion by process of education, scientific knowledge, etc., so that the country has developed into an atheist nation, perhaps one of the first and maybe the only atheist country in the world. However, there's no question of outlawing any religious beliefs or even religious prayers or practices on the part of individuals. Individuals may believe what they like, even even pray, etc. But all of the churches, mosques, and so forth have been converted into useful social buildings, either for social activities or some economic activities. And the training and development and organization of church institutions don't exist. There's no desire for it on the part of the people. There may be some older people who still have religious beliefs, either as Catholics or Muslims or Orthodox, but they may observe some holidays and prayers on an individual basis. There's nothing to prevent them from doing that.
I see. Can you give us perhaps a consolidated history of Albania from, say, the beginning of this century?
Well, that's a big order.
Because it has gone through quite a few changes with King
John. Well, if you want to go back to the beginning of the century, let's go back a little further.
Well, this includes the King Zog era. That's when I'm always...
Back 500 years. For 500 years from the 15th century, Albania was under the domination of the Ottoman Empire, the Turks. And this domination was overthrown only in 1912. Before 1912, the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire, still was in control of a good part of the Balkans, including Albania. There was a national liberation movement that was built up in the course of 50 or 60 years before that, which finally culminated during just before the outbreak of the Balkan Wars. In 1912, the leader, Ismail Cemali, got together all the leaders of the Albanian people in all the provinces and declared independence from Turkey, from the Ottoman Empire. That, however, was not recognized officially by the big powers, and who considered, who were preparing for World War One. The Balkan Wars broke out. The big powers decided to dismember Albania partly and give some to Serbia, to the Serbia and Montenegro, and some to Greece, etc. Then the Balkan Wars broke out, and there was a lot of disorganization and turmoil. And about 1924, this Zog took power, and he was an army officer. He was, and he declared himself king. He took power with the help of Serbian forces, Yugoslav forces in the north, and he was in control until 1939 when the Italians, under Mussolini, invaded. It was one of the first opening gambits in World War II. The Italians invaded in 1939, April, and King Zog, so-called, ran away with all the wealth and gold that he could carry from the country, and the Italians began to rule the country with the aid of the Germans. This was the beginning of a national liberation war, and patriotic forces fought from 1939 all the way up to 1944, November 44, when they drove out the last of the German invaders. They suffered a great deal, but they fought in heroic battles and liberated their country with their own strength, with their own forces, without any foreign soldiers stepping on their soil or even giving them any considerable help that would amount to anything. They were one of the few countries that were occupied by the fascists and liberated themselves without the aid of either U.S., British, or Russian armies.
Now, the change to a communist form of government, when did that occur, and how did the break with Moscow begin?
Well, the socialist form of government was established during the War for Liberation, actually, or shortly afterwards, because the War for Liberation was led by the Communist Party of Albania at that time, which later changed its name to the Party of Labor. And they immediately began to set up a new form of government, which was not exactly communist or even socialist. It was a people's republic. And they proclaimed people's power, where there would be no ruling class and no kings or no foreign domination, and the people had a democratic organization in the form of People's Republic of Albania. But Little by little, bit by bit, they began to install certain elements of socialism because they nationalized what little industry there was, or what industry had been left over. Had been supporting the fascist occupiers and had to run away when the country was liberated. So this was the basis for socialist transformation of their economy and industrialization. In 1960, they broke off with the Soviet Union, which was trying to dominate the country, take it over, run it, and treat it as an offshoot of the Soviet Union. In fact, they wanted to set up naval bases and military bases in the country, and the Albanians wouldn't stand for that.
Now, why do you suppose there wasn't a repeat of 1956 Budapest? Or, why did the Soviet Union enforce its will with Albania? Surely they could have if they wanted to.
Well, 1960, I don't know if they could have. I don't even know if they were contemplating that. It was a little difficult to get there because they didn't have a common border in Soviet Union and Albania. I'm only guessing as to why. I'm not a mind reader, and I can't go back in history and figure out why they didn't do this or didn't do that. But I think that the general international situation was such, was not conducive for them to launch an attack, although there were attempts to, through Yugoslavia, and the Yugoslavs several times tried to invade under one pretext or another and take over the country. Also, there were attempts after liberation on the part of the England and the U.S. through their clandestine operations to drop saboteurs into the country and try to stir up sabotage and a movement, you know, to overthrow the new government, but that was squashed.
Now, the period of time when the Chinese were a major part of the country, that's probably one of the most interesting and most little known facts of the 20th century in Europe, to have the Chinese be a force in a European country. Now, you were in Albania during that time. Can you perhaps describe what that was like to...
Well, they weren't really a force. They had a little presence there and were supposed to be helping develop the economy and industry, but they didn't do very much of a good job. In fact, they were dragging their feet and they weren't too technologically developed themselves. And in addition to that, there was a lot of political friction between the two countries and the two leading parties, and it developed to a point where the Albanians felt they could do better without this so-called help from China, and just asked them to go back home.
Was there a price attached to that help?
No. As a matter of fact, Albania prides itself on having paid off all debts, including the so-called help, which they got a little bit of from even the Russians or the Chinese or anybody else. They paid off all those debts long ago. And they're proud of the fact that they have no foreign debt whatsoever, including the so-called aid which they got from their so-called friends.
Okay. I want to ask you one more question, and that's something that we've tried many times here on this program, and that's the... And you must have faced this difficulty, too. You can't call Albania from this country at all.
Well, I think that's true. I've never had occasion to want to call there, but I don't know. I think it may be possible. I'm not sure about that. I think some people have been in touch with with Albania. In fact, I think that some people that I know have recently received phone calls from Tirana. What the problem is when you try to call from here, I don't know. Maybe you used the wrong telephone service.
Well, the phone company says that there's no service between the United States and Albania. They don't say...
Which company?
AT&T, and I believe that would be the only company to handle it anyway.
I don't know. Maybe the others would. I'm not familiar with that aspect at all, but I know there have been some communications between by telephone, but how it was arranged, I don't know. I think just recently, one of the Albanian Americans was visiting Tirana, put in call from Tirana, called back here to his home. How that was arranged, or what route it traveled, I don't know. It may have gone through a roundabout route like Switzerland or Paris or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can call from Canada. We found that out, but not directly from here. And perhaps Tirana can call directly to the United States. That's one thing I don't know.
Possible. I don't know. I imagine it's quite possible.
Tell me, are there payphones in Albania?
Oh, yes, they are very, very cheap, something like 30 gindaka. That would be about 10 cents on a payphone. And they're very nice and clean, and no vandalism on it, and no broken equipment or stolen headphones or anything like that.
I see.
Work.
Any advice for people that might be interested in visiting Albania?
Well, as you may know, the policy for many years has been not to grant visas to American citizens. Canadians can go, and of course, most Europeans are British, but not American passport holders. But there have been occasionally some exceptions to that. Not too often. As far as Americans want to go to visit, I've had many people ask me what they can do. They're very interested and would like to go there. But I can't really help them very much because it's not up to me. It's a question of policy of the Albanian government, and I think they have very good reasons for being cautious about that. As a matter of fact, they don't have relations with the U.S. and don't welcome tourists from here. They also, the same thing applies to the Soviet Union. And they also don't have relations with South Africa. And they also don't have relations with Israel. And for political reasons.
Tell me this, how aware are people there of what's going on in the rest of the world?
Oh, very much aware. You can turn on the news in the evening. They have television. Almost every family has television. They've had radios a long, long time. And even color TV. The news news reports covers not only local affairs, but all affairs all around the world. And I've watched it many times. If you talk to people there, they know very well what's going on all around the world.
Can you give me an example of what kind of stories are covered?
Oh, well, more or less the same kind of things that would be covered here. I mean, they don't have stories of crimes and fires and sex or things like that. Those things are out. But developments in Europe, for instance, what's going on in Eastern Europe, that would be covered. The question of the persecution of Albanian people in Yugoslavia and Kosovo, that would be covered. Any noticeable events going on, say, in South Africa, or the freedom of Mandela, for instance, that is covered. It might report that in the news agency's reports, I see an item that one of the leading personalities in the Albanian government sent a message of greeting to Mandela upon his release. and a message of support for the cause in the struggle against apartheid. And it was printed in the media, in the main newspapers and television, and reported in their news bulletins sent abroad.
Do you see things changing in Albania anytime soon as far as...
They're changing all the time. As a matter of fact, they're making progress, they're developing, they're growing. As you grow, you run into problems that are new and unforeseen, and they figure out how to tackle them, and there are changes going on all the time. But they're always moving in one direction, and that is to improve the life and standard of living of the people, and strengthen their defenses, because they're very, very aware of any dangers threatening them from outside.
Well, I meant with respect to the outside world. Do you see that changing at all? In other words, will Americans be...
No, I don't see any need for a change. They've always had an open policy towards the so-called outside world. They've, year by year, slowly, steadily, been developing relations. They've had, for many, many years, played a positive role in the United Nations. I've attended United Nations General Assembly meetings a number of times where the Albanian foreign minister would give his national report, and I found that it was listened to with great attention and received a very positive response on the part of many of the national delegates from different countries.
Do you think you'll go back again?
Go back where?
To Albania.
Oh, yes, I hope so. If I... perhaps another year or so. I usually manage to get there every 2, 3, 4 years. I get a chance to go over.
How many Americans do you think are able to do that?
Well, in general, I mean, now, well, not too many. Not very many. As you know, Albanian Americans, that is, many of the Albanian ethnic Albanian immigrants in this country, and there may be 300,000 or 400,000 of them, I think, roughly. They generally are free to go and travel. They have no trouble getting visas to go in groups or even as individuals to visit their families, relatives, visit their old towns, villages, or districts where they came from. But Americans in general do not have such a freedom to go in there, and they have to depend on an invitation, you know, to be given a visa. So I don't think there are too many that I know of. There have been a few, even journalists, like someone from the Boston. Christian Science Monitor had made a few trips there. Some reporter from the Boston Herald had gone there once or twice. As you may know, Marvin Howe of the New York Times went there once, and some correspondents from TV networks have been there occasionally, but that's not a general policy, and it's usually isolated.
All right, well, Jack Shulman, I want to thank you for talking with us tonight and for giving us some information on Albania, a country that we seem to know so little about here.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to get on the air with you and to tell your listeners a little bit about the facts of this little-known country.
All right, thanks very much for talking with us, and keep us updated if you go back there.
I will try.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
That was Jack Shulman speaking to us from his home in Brooklyn. He has a letter in today's New York Times about Albania, and he's one of the few Americans that has gone to Albania on a regular basis. Boy, I bet he has quite a lot of nice pictures, too. I saw a postcard from Albania, and it looked so much like Switzerland. It was incredible. I just didn't think it looked like that. Well, if you have any comments about Albania or any information, feel free to give us a call, 632-6901. Of course, we're going to be going into some other things. Right now, we're listening to music from Albania. This I can see exactly what it is we're listening to. This is music from South Albania. And the it's an instrumental improvisation played by Kiran Baki. And there's really not much more I can say about it, except it is from the southern part of Albania. Let's listen to that, and then we'll come back, do some other things, take your phone calls, that kind of stuff. 10:47 on a Saturday night. And our phone number once again is 632-6901, area code 516. Said before, music from Albania. We've got quite a bit of it. Actually, this is the only record I've ever seen from Albania. Well, music from Albania, anyway. It's put out on... What record company is this, anyway? It's a record company that doesn't really care what the name of the record company is because they don't seem to be Topic Records, it looks like. I believe that's correct. And the album is called Folk Music of Albania, collected and edited by A.L. Lloyd. I just had to get this when I saw it in a record store a few years ago. You don't see this kind of thing every day, you know? Put out in London. That's a Topic Records Limited of London. Well, let's see if anyone is out there. Oh, well, people are picking up the phone and hanging them up here. It's not nice. 632-6901 is our phone number. And sorry about that, whoever just got hung up on. You can give us a call later on, 10:51. It's 9 minutes to 11 o'clock. And it looks like we could learn a thing or two from Albania as far as pollution goes. Saw in the paper today, Suffolk plastic ban rejected in court. That's right, the appellate division of State Supreme Court in Brooklyn yesterday threw out Suffolk's law to ban use of plastic containers used by fast food chains and plastic grocery bags, because the county failed to do adequate environmental studies. So what that means is there'll be plastic garbage around for some time to come. In a four-page decision, a four-judge panel ruled unanimously that the plastics law is null and void because the county did not comply with the provisions of the State Environmental Quality Review Act. The appeals court decision goes further than State Supreme Court Justice Jack Canavo's ruling on June 2nd, which found the law unconstitutional. Actually, found the law constitutional, but ordered its implementation delayed until environmental studies were done. Under the plastic ban approved in 1988, the county would have prohibited businesses from using polystyrene and polyvinyl chloride for such products as coffee cups and hamburger containers, and would have banned use of non-biodegradable grocery bags. The law never took effect because of continuing lawsuits and a series of moratoriums. The decision drew praise from the plastics and food service industries and was denounced by supporters of the law. Listen to this, folks. Listen to this. This is what Leonard Rashkin, head of the Eastern Coffee Service Association, a group that supplies coffee to delicatessens and restaurants across Long Island, this is what he said about it. Tonight, I'm going to lift up my plastic foam cup and salute the judges. Yeah, that's what's going on around here. County Executive Patrick Halpin said the environment took a trashing from the courts today. This law is designed to reduce the amount of plastic in the waste stream. While the plastics groups may consider it a victory, Halpin emphasized they have an obligation to implement the comprehensive recycling program, which they have talked about for months, but on which we've seen very little action. And Halpin said he will discuss the decision with county lawyers and legislators, but he said preliminary indications are that chances for appeal are not optimistic. Legislator Stephen Engelbreit said he will resubmit his bill with some modifications within several months and seek approval after an environmental impact study is done. Well, so that's a major defeat, I think, for the people of Long Island, for people just about everywhere, because what is the possible advantage to throwing all this plastic away and just having it pile up forever and ever? You know, it's a step backwards. And while the law may have been repealed for the moment, there's still always good old people power, and that can work in the form of boycotts and just education. Know who's using the plastics. You know, I know McDonald's uses plastic in their packaging, and I don't know of other companies that do. I know Burger King doesn't. They use they do for some things, but not for nearly as many. And I think McDonald's is one of the biggest offenders. So perhaps a boycott of McDonald's is in order? I don't know. If people can call up and educate me on that, I certainly would appreciate it. And that's not all, folks. Tar balls are washing up on the Nassau shore. Yes, they've been washing up on the beaches of Nassau County's Barrier Island from Silver Point Beach to Point Lookout, probably coming from an oil spill off Bayonne, New Jersey, the Coast Guard said yesterday. However, the Staten Island-based Ekloff Marine Corporation has not accepted responsibility for the oil that has washed up on Long Island's shores, even though it has agreed to pay for the cleanup of the affected Nassau beaches. Seems rather suspicious to me. According to Petty Officer Gary Reeves, the Coast Guard is assuming that the tar balls, which started appearing on the tide line and beaches of Nassau's Barrier Island yesterday, came from a spill on Wednesday. But Reeves said the Coast Guard will know definitely if the Ekloff spill is the source of the pollution once it receives the results on tests of oil samples that were collected by workers yesterday and shipped to the Guard's oil lab in Groton, Connecticut. Results are expected in about a week, he said. Ekloff claimed responsibility for a spill of 27,000 gallons of number 6 fuel oil on Wednesday at the Exxon Constable Hook facility in Bayonne. But a woman who answered the phone for Ekloff yesterday said the company will have no comment about the current beach wash-ups or the oil spill. Reeves said the wash-up involves a moderate amount of oil. The Coast Guard began cleaning up the Nassau beaches yesterday, and Clean Venture Co-op has been contracted to take over the cleanup operation today. Reeves said he does not know how long it will take to clean the beaches at Silver Point, Atlantic Beach, Long Beach, Lido Beach, and Point Lookout. According to officials in Hempstead Town, the Nassau County Health Department, and the Coast Guard, there appear to be no threat to marine or wildlife on the beaches. But let's face it, folks, I doubt very much they're enjoying it. Some Atlantic Beach residents disagree with that statement, not my statement, the one before that. Brigitte Braff, the environmental commissioner for the village, said she found seagulls with their breasts coated in oil yesterday, and that's generally not good for them. Robert Erdman, an Atlantic Beach Village employee, noticed the tarballs at about 8 a.m. Thursday when he was making his daily survey of the beach. From a distance, it looks like seashells, Erdman said, but when you touch it, it's just like the tar that you put on the streets. Shelley Domash, a spokeswoman for the Nassau County Health Department, said the County Police Department's Air Bureau will fly over the beaches tomorrow morning to follow the spread of the oil. Michael McDonald, a spokesman for Hempstead Town, said local workers will monitor the beaches and are waiting to see what is left behind from yesterday's high tide. That's when we'll really know how serious this is, McConnell said. And Exxon has announced an immediate suspension of all tanker and barge operations at its Bayway refinery in Linden, New Jersey, and its Bayonne, New Jersey distribution terminal after three oil spills at those facilities since January 1st, the two most recent occurring on Wednesday and Thursday. Exxon was blamed for the January spill, and Ekloff took responsibility for Wednesday's mishap. And Coast Guard Captain Robert North said officials haven't determined who was to blame for Thursday night's spill, which he said was largely contained by booms. But folks, this is getting ridiculous. This is getting ridiculous. We're not learning anything. We're not going anywhere. We just keep spilling things. And while we may not be the people out there spilling the oil, by allowing it to happen and by not becoming really loud and obnoxious when it does happen, we might just as well be spilling it ourselves. So we need letters from you, folks. We need letters sent to the proper people, to your county legislators, to your state senators, to your representatives in Congress. We need letters and perhaps some oil-soaked bills sent to the appropriate companies. And we need people to rally, demonstrate, and save the wildlife before there is no wildlife left. Yes, we can learn something from other countries here, because we're certainly in the lead as far as destruction. 632-6901. That's our telephone number. Good evening.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, what's
up? It's Steven. I helped you out at the radio song. I'm friends with Andrew.
Oh, yes.
How are you?
Okay, what's on your mind?
Not much. I was just wondering. I was listening just now, but I'm not sure of the topic that you're really discussing.
Well, you were listening, but you're not sure what the topic is.
Well, I heard about, the Soviet Union, things like that.
Okay.
And Exxon, things like that, the oil spill.
Okay, why don't you just tell me what's on your mind?
I don't know. I think I'd say Exxon.
Okay, well, how do you feel about Exxon? What should we do about them?
I think they're not doing one of the greatest jobs at all to clean up. I know they're trying hard, but, maybe they're not working, like they should be. They're having a lot of problems, I could see.
Well,
they just had another spill recently.
Well, you see, we're the ones that have the problem. They're the ones that cause the problem. And, yeah, that creates a problem for them, too. But, the human beings that live on this planet and all the other creatures that live on this planet, they're the ones that really have the problem, because they're the ones that are suffering, health damage because of this.
That's right.
What do you think we can do to get them to pay some more attention?
Maybe they should, interview their drivers more, pay more attention to their, their workers and their employees. Because then they, it depends on the attitude of the employee. They should check that out.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point, because with the Valdez spill, it said that three people were in command, all of which were incompetent.
Right.
And you can't really blame them for everything. Obviously, something wasn't looked at carefully by the company, so they have to take some responsibility. And to be honest, I think with the amount of spills that Exxon has been involved in, I don't think it's unfair to expect that company to go completely out of business. I mean, that's not the kind of thing a company is supposed to do, and obviously they're inept, so they should not be around anymore, and that maybe that would be a good lesson to the other companies not to screw up.
That's true. It is. It's sad what's happening to the fish and all the wildlife that's in the waters now.
Yeah, that's extremely sad and extremely stupid for us to be constantly destroying things. This is still the only planet we know, and until we find others, I think we should take pretty good care of this one.
Well, I want to know. I was just, thinking. I heard something about the shellfish on the island that was washing up ashore or something like that. It was some pollution in the water that they were saying.
Well, I don't know about that. Why don't you tell me about it?
No, I just hear it. you know, and, you know, I really didn't pay much attention to it. And, you know, some on the TV, too, but, you know, I figured maybe you would know because I know you guys discuss that a lot.
Well, there's, you see, after a while, it becomes kind of, you lose track of, you know, what's washing up on the shores this week.
That's right.
I just know a lot of...
Either a needle or something else, right?
A lot of garbage is washing up and being dumped out, and we're just not, we're not thinking, you know, and what do we have? We've got laws that are intended to take care of this mess being repealed, and, you know, big companies winning and saying, oh, great, now I can waste more materials and create more pollution. We're happy about this. We're not going to lose money, and jobs are safe and all that kind of garbage.
Exactly. It's all being ignored. You know, they should pay more attention to things like that. It's, again, it's not, you know, the wildlife again, you know, and even the people. Some people could suffer if they even get hurt with one of those, you know, those needles or anything like that, you know, if they don't see it. But I'm glad it wasn't as bad this year as last summer. Not the one that just passed, but the one before that. You know, I think it was a little better this year.
Well, of course, we did have the Exxon Valdez spill.
That's true.
And I think that was probably worse than anything that ever happened.
Oh, yeah.
And who knows what's next. You know, once these things occur, there's really no turning back. So we've got to pretty much set the rules in place as to what's, you know, what's acceptable and what's not and what has to be done when these things occur. And I think we can learn something from people like animal rights activists. You know, they're loud, obnoxious, and they make their presence known.
That's right. That's
and in this particular case, I think this is probably the most important of all. We've got to do this, and this involves everybody, not just people that care about particular creatures. This is everything on the planet, folks.
Exactly. My friend was just came back from Alaska, and a couple months they went in August. And they, you know, saw the oil spill, and she said it was a disaster. It was terrible. It was the water, the rocks. It was disgusting, she said. It was really bad.
It was, and the lies that Exxon fed us, saying, oh, we can clean this up by September. Of course they couldn't clean it up by September. Nobody could possibly clean that up. If gods had come out of the sky, they couldn't have cleaned it up.
Exactly.
So it's, you know, the fact that they're even allowed to get away with that kind of garbage, and... I mean, I think they should be fined so much that they should be crippled as far as what's left of them, because they just show no concern for the environment. No concern at all. Just profits. That's everything. And, boy, you know, we're all going to go down with them if that's allowed to continue.
All they want to do is just make their money. That's all. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
No?
Sure. And anybody who's, you know, who's in bed with them should suffer, too, I think. And that includes shareholders. That includes anybody.
That's right.
Got to send a message.
When did it exactly happen? What month was it, the Valdez?
Oh, gosh, when was that? Wasn't it in the spring, last spring? I don't know exactly what month.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can't remember now. Just, I don't understand that. It's not fair. It really isn't. They should pay more attention to it. You know, they should give a damn about it.
Sure.
Know?
Well, we all should. You know, they reflect the mood of the people. And until they realize that the people aren't on their side anymore... what's to stop them?
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you for calling and, you know, keep thinking of these things.
Very nice speaking to you again, Eric.
All right, take care.
And hopefully I'll see you at the Radiothon this year.
Yeah, Radiothon coming up April 5th through 14th.
That's right, and I want everybody to pledge that they as much as they could.
All right.
All righty, good night, Eric.
Thanks for calling. Good night.
Bye-bye now.
And we also want to say thanks to all the people that called in over the last week. As you know, a week ago we went on the air and asked for people to call in with support for WUSB being able to expand its frequency out east a bit and express disapproval towards a proposed station at 89.9 FM out in Sag Harbor that would pretty much obliterate our signal out there. Over 1,000 people called in the past week. Over 1,000 people, and I'm just flabbergasted by that. And a lot of us, you know, a few of us had to stay up all night long copying down all the names so that we could, you know, have the names sent to the appropriate agencies by last Friday, yesterday, actually, which was the deadline. It was worth it, folks. It was worth it because we got the word out, you know, and our listeners were a tremendous help to us, and we just want to say thanks for that. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen next. We'll keep you updated as far as how that is all working. If you still want to add your name to our list of supporters and people that believe 90.1 FM should should indeed cover Long Island, cover Suffolk County, and that there shouldn't be another radio station that will interfere with that signal, you can do one of two things. You can write us a letter. Our address is WUSB, State University at Stony Brook, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. Or you can call our hotline, which the message on there is outdated. You know, we've been so busy we haven't gotten around to changing it, but you can call that and leave your name and address and or any other comments you might have, and that's 632-6498. But we will be updating you as far as how that that progresses in the future and what else we have planned. We have quite a few things planned and quite a few exciting things coming up. But again, Radiothon is happening in early April, April 5th through 14th. We really need people's support because we do have big plans, and we want to be able to reach more people and have even better programming and more facilities and things like that, all kinds of things that will benefit everybody. We'll be back with some more phone calls. 632-6901 is our phone number. The program is Brain Damage. It's 8 minutes after 11 o'clock. Let's plunge back into this strange Roger Waters album that I found in Amsterdam called The Body. Wow, this is great stuff. If anybody knows of this album, if you have this album, I'd like to know if it's available anywhere else. Because a lot of people want to steal it from me, and I just don't think that's cool. We're going to hear that song called Breathe now, which I think led into the Breathe on Dark Side of the Moon. Let's hear it. Well, it's not that I want to fade down this the strange-sounding stuff that comes after the songs, but we do have a limited amount of time. And I wanted to play that song because it said some really neat things. Too bad I've never made it to a Pink Floyd album. I think that's a great song. Of course, I suppose the rest of Pink Floyd wasn't on it, just Roger Waters, but it came from 1970, a full 3 years before the other song called Breathe came out. And I happen to like this one a lot better. just think the lyrics are just so much more... Oh, you know, there's so much more. Yeah, that's what it is. It's 11 minutes after 11 o'clock, and the program's Brain Damage. We're taking your calls at 632-6901, area code 516. But we have something late-breaking news. Well, not really late-breaking, but something that I think is fascinating. I took a train today. And that in itself isn't all that interesting, but it's the first time I took a Long Island Railroad train in a while. And I noticed that they had... is this train music? Great. I noticed they had a new service available where it's supposed to make it easier and faster for you to get train information. And I had to make use of it today to find out when the trains were leaving. So I wanted to run a little comparison check here to see if we're moving forward or moving backward as far as getting information out. Now, there's three ways to get train information as far as I'm concerned. There's the way you should be able to do it, which is just looking through a schedule and figuring out where everything is. Okay? Then there's calling up and asking somebody for the information and getting it that way. And then there's the third way, the way that has just begun to hit us Long Islanders, of calling up and speaking to a computer and getting that information. So, what we are going to do tonight, folks, we are going to have a little contest. We're going to see which way is the fastest and most convenient. Okay, well, it's 11:13, so what we are going to do now is ask ourselves three questions to start with. Three questions, and we're going to try to find out the answers to those three questions in three different ways. Hopefully we'll get the same three answers, but one never knows, does one? Okay, what we want to know is this. When is the first train from Stony Brook to New York after 9 a.m. on weekdays? Second question is, when is the first train to Ronkonkoma after 6 p.m. on weekdays? That's to Ronkonkoma from New York Penn Station. And the final question, what is the peak fare to Montauk from Penn Station? Okay? Those three questions. Now, I have a stack of schedules here. Picked it up at Penn Station today. Got every single one there is. At least I think I did. I don't think I'm missing any of them. And what I'm going to do is start the timer here and try to find out the answers to those questions live on the air, see how long it takes. Okay? Ready? Go. First question, when is the first train from Stony Brook to New York? We find the Port Jefferson branch schedule and look on the weekdays. First train from Stony Brook to New York, 9:01. It arrives in Penn Station at 10:48. Okay, first question has been answered. Now, when is the first train to Ronkonkoma from New York after 6 p.m. on weekdays? Here's the Ronkonkoma branch. Monday to Friday to Ronkonkoma from Penn Station. We have 6:21. It arrives in Ronkonkoma at 7:37. That's a peak train. And now, what is the peak fare to Montauk from Penn? Here's the Montauk schedule. Let's see what we have here. Between, got to look at this little chart here and figure this out. Between City Terminal Zone and Zone 14, which is Montauk. I never could figure out how to read these things. Well, it's not $224. That's a monthly peak one way, $14. Okay, stop the clock. 1 minute, 5 seconds it took me to find that out. All right, let's write that down. 1 minute and 5 seconds to get all that information if you have all the schedules. Now, what we're going to do is call one of the hotline numbers, and we don't have a touch-tone phone, folks. Nope, we do not have a touch-tone phone, so we are going to talk to a person or attempt to talk to a person. Now, I suppose let's be fair about this. We won't start timing it until it starts ringing. How's that? So all this time of dialing will be free time, I suppose. Okay, so we dialed the number, but as soon as it starts ringing, we will start the timer going. This time we don't have a touch-tone phone, so we can't push any of those buttons. Oh, great.
The number you have reached, 2345477, has been changed.
Well, that's right. It was changed. I keep forgetting. The numbers in the phone book are not the real numbers. I do remember what the number was changed to. Okay, this doesn't count on the clock either, folks. This is my incompetence here. And we'll just won't say anything else about that. Okay, it started ringing. The timer has begun. We are going to ask the representative these questions.
Thank you for calling the Long Island Railroad's Teletrip. If you are calling from a touchtone telephone, push button number 1. All other callers, please stay on the line.
Okay, we don't have a touchtone phone. We can't do that. So we're just going to have to wait for a cheery representative to help us.
A representative will be with you shortly. Please stay on the line during the silence and do not hang up.
Okay, well, you heard it there. Those are our commands. We can't hang up. We have to stay here. Wait for a representative to be
Hello,
with us.
Hello, China, please, Mishua.
Yes, hi. I have 3 questions. I'd like to know when the first train from Stony Brook to New York after 9 in the morning on weekdays is.
Stony Brook to New York?
Yes, that's right.
All right. Out of Stony Brook in the morning, huh?
Yeah, on a weekday.
That would be at 4:30.
After 9 o'clock?
Oh. But you said first thing in the morning.
After 9 o'clock.
Oh. That'd be 9:01.
9:01. Okay. And I need to know what the first train to Ronkonkoma from New York after 6 p.m. on weekdays is.
From New York to Ronkonkoma?
That's right, after 6 p.m.
All right, that would be 6:20 and 6:53.
6:20 and 6:53. And finally, I need to know what the peak fare to Montauk from Penn Station is.
Peak fare to Montauk would be $14 one way.
Okay, thank you very much. That's correct.
Bye.
Good night. All right, so that took 1 minute and 45 seconds. So, okay, we beat the representative by 40 seconds. Actually, that's quite good for the representatives because we weren't left on hold for very long at all. So I have to give them a check. How's that? Won't do them much good, but okay, now the fun part. Now the fun part, folks. Let's call the computer and do it that way. Again, we'll start the clock as the ring begins, to make it fair. Okay, the clock has been started. This time we have a touchtone phone, and we will do it the way we're supposed to do it.
Thank you for calling the Long Island Railroad's Teletrip. If you are calling from a touchtone telephone, push button number 1. All other callers, please stay on the line.
Here we go.
Thank you. Just follow these instructions to get the information you need. For schedule and fare information, push 1. For all other information, push 2.
Okay.
If you are leaving from Penn Station, New York City, push 1. If you are going to Penn Station, New York City, push 2. If you are not leaving from or going to Penn Station, push 3.
Okay, we are going to Penn Station from Stony Brook.
So the first 5 letters of the station you are leaving from using the push buttons now.
Okay, S-T-O-N-Y.
Stony Brook.
Yeah.
For departures today, push 1. For departures tomorrow, push 2. For departures on other days, push 3.
Other days.
Today's date is 3-3. Please enter the date you wish to depart.
Oh, God. I guess it's 3-5 then, right? 3-5.
Monday.
Yeah.
3-5.
That's right.
If this is not correct, push the operator button. If it is correct, push the numbers indicating the time you would like to leave, followed by the letters AM or PM.
Okay, 9 o'clock AM. 9:00 AM.
There's a train leaving at 9:01 AM, which will arrive at 10:48 AM. Transfer at Huntington for this train. The train after that leaves at 10:15 AM.
No, I don't need that. I don't need that.
And arrives at 12:02 PM. Transfer at Huntington for this train.
Okay, I don't need that. I need another question.
The train after that leaves at 11:35 AM.
I have another
and
question.
Arrives at 1:21 PM. Transfer at Huntington for this train.
Okay.
To hear the train information again, push 1. For additional departures, push 2. For return trip information, push 3. For fare information, push 4. To start from the beginning, push 5.
I think I want to start from the beginning.
For schedule and fare information,
okay.
Push 1. For all other information, push 2.
Schedule and fare information, I got to go to Ronkonkoma now.
If you are leaving from Penn Station,
yeah.
New York City,
uh-huh.
Push 1.
Okay, there.
Spell the first 5 letters of the station you are traveling to using the push buttons now.
Ronkonkoma, R-O-N-K-O.
Ronkonkoma.
That's right.
For departures today, push 1. For departures tomorrow, push 2. For departures on other days, push 3.
Okay, other days, we want Monday. Here we go.
Today's date is 3-3. Please enter the date you wish to depart.
3-5.
Monday, 3-5. If this is not correct, push the operator button. If it is correct,
that's correct,
push the numbers indicating the time you would like to leave, followed by the letters AM or PM.
Okay, we said the first train after 6 o'clock, 6 p.m., so it's 6:00 p.m.
There's a train leaving at 6:21 p.m.,
uh-oh,
which will arrive at 7:37 p.m.
That's a minute
off. The train after that leaves at 6:53 p.m. and arrives at 8:11 p.m.
Okay,
the
stop.
The train after
no.
that leaves at 7:15 p.m.
Please shut
and
up.
And arrives at 8:31 p.m.
Okay.
To hear the train information again, push 1.
I don't want
for
to.
For additional departures, push 2.
No.
For return trip information,
uh-uh,
push 3. For fare information, push 4.
Okay, I want fare information.
Start from the beginning, push 5.
I want fare information, so I'm going to hit 4.
The regular one-way fare for this trip
no,
is
that's not what I meant.
$8.
No.
And 75
no,
cents.
Fare information
the
for another.
The one-way off-peak fare is $6. The monthly commutation fare is $180. The weekly commutation fare is $56. The senior citizen and handicapped
I don't
one-way
care
fare
about this.
Is $4.25.
Please, shut
to
up.
To hear the train information again, push 1. For additional departures, push 2. For return trip information, push 3. For fare information, push 4. To start from the beginning, push 5.
Back to the beginning.
For schedule and fare information, push 1. For all other information, push 2.
What other information could there be? All right, well, I'm going to hit 1.
If you are leaving from Penn Station, New York City, push 1. If you are going to Penn Station, New York City, push 2. If you are not leaving from or going to Penn Station, push 3.
Well, I just want the fare information. I'm not going at any particular time.
That was an invalid number.
I didn't say
please
anything.
Please try again. If you are leaving from Penn Station, New York City,
okay,
push
I guess
1.
I'm leaving from...
If you are going to Penn Station, New York City, push 2. If you are not leaving...
Okay, okay, okay.
Spell the first 5 letters of the station you are traveling to...
Montauk.
Using the...
M-O-N-T-A.
Montauk.
Yeah.
For departures today, push 1. For departures tomorrow, push 2. For departures on other days, push 3.
I just want to know what the fare is. Other days, I guess. Peak fare is
what today's date is 3-3. Please enter the date you wish to depart.
3-5.
Monday, 3-5. If this is not correct, push the operator button. If it is correct, push the numbers indicating the time you would like to leave, followed by the letters AM or PM.
Oh, now when does peak begin? I guess peak begins about 4 o'clock PM. How's that?
There's a train leaving at 6:06 p.m., which will arrive at 9:15 p.m.
Right, but I want the fare. I don't want the time.
For this train. The train after that leaves at 8:31 p.m. and arrives at 12:01 a.m. Transfer at Jamaica for this train.
Finish.
To hear the train information again, push 1. For additional departures, push 2. For return trip information, push 3. For fare information,
yes,
push 4.
Okay.
The regular one-way
here
fare for this trip is $14.
Thank you.
The one-way off-peak fare is
okay, stop the clock.
$9.50. The monthly commutation fare is...
We'll just let her babble on for a little while, see what she does.
$24. The weekly commutation fare is $69. The senior citizen and handicapped one-way fare is $7. To hear the train information again, push 1. For additional departures, push 2.
Well, I want to go back to the beginning.
For return trip information, push 3. For fare information... push 4. To start from the beginning, push 5.
Let's do that, because I want to see what the other information is.
For schedule and fare information, push 1. For all other information, push 2.
Okay, I'm going to press 2. Let's see what happens.
For information on tours and specials,
ooh,
push 1. For refund information, push 2.
Let's get refund information. That sounds like fun.
Unused one-way tickets may be refunded for the full purchase price. Ticket offices are authorized to make cash refunds for tickets purchased with cash to a maximum of 10 tickets up to 90 days after original purchase. After 90 days, all partially used tickets are refunded by mail only. Weekly and monthly tickets are refundable, less an amount equal to the difference between the purchase price and the sum of the appropriate alternative fares to your destination for the days you held the ticket. For schedule and fare information, push 1. For all other information, push 2.
We're just not going to do anything now, folks, and see what happens. See how angry she gets.
Please try again. For schedule and fare information, push 1. For all other information, push 2.
I'm not going to say a word. I'm not pushing those buttons. Sorry. Nothing you can do
about
it.
If you would like to wait for a representative, just push the operator button.
What if I don't want to wait for a representative? What do I do then? You hung up? She hung up on me. I can't believe it. Well, anyway, folks, we didn't count that last part in the time, the part where I was experimenting with it, because that wouldn't have been fair. So the final times are the amount of time it took me to look up everything in the schedules that I picked up at Penn Station. It took me 1 minute and 5 seconds to do that. The time it took for me to call a representative and get the information from her, including the time on hold, was 1 minute 45 seconds. And the time it took to get the same information on the new modernized computer system that has just been installed, 7 minutes 26 seconds. Technology moves on. 632-6901. That's our phone number. Give us a call. Let's see what's on your mind. Good evening.
Yes. My friend David was on the line before.
Yeah?
I'm the one who went to Alaska.
You're the one who went to Alaska. Oh.
Yes.
Well, I feel sorry for you in a way.
Yeah, well, it was disgusting.
I can imagine.
You were picking it up with paper towels.
You know, I saw that when there's an oil spill in California a couple of weeks ago, and you see these people running around throwing paper towels onto the ocean and thinking that's going to do something.
Like paper towels, they're wiping the oil off of paper towels. You need all the paper towels in the world there, I mean.
It's not going to do much good at all.
I know.
Well, now, why did you go to Alaska?
Well, I have an uncle who lives in Alaska, and my father wanted to go visit and do some fishing, but...
That's not a good time to do that.
Well, it was in the Kenai River.
Uh-huh.
Whatever, that's not even near.
Uh-huh.
It was. We took a boat over by there, where the oil still was.
So
and there were people running around like nuts, you know, like crazy, with all these paper towels. Each of them holding a roll of paper towels.
So did you come back a different person from when you left?
Yes.
Sort of like a religious experience?
Well, not really, but it's just like the things that people do. And Exxon is just like ignoring it.
Yeah, well, it's not in their interest to pay much attention to it and admit responsibility, is it?
And a lot of people aren't buying their gasoline anymore.
Good. That's really good. And a lot of people have ripped up their credit cards and sent oil-soaked bills to them. And it should keep going, I think.
still, I mean, how could they just, like, do that and not even, I mean, not even put anything into it? Paper towels.
Paper towels. That pretty much sums it up.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I'm the person who went.
Okay, are you going back there anytime soon?
Excuse me?
Are you going back there again?
No, but my uncle calls every once in a while and lets us know what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you find out something new. You know, I'd like to know just how long it does take to clean up this mess.
I love how they said September.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, the results of this could very well be permanent as far as
extinction. 10 years.
At least 10 years, but it's probably going to affect some species permanently. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
You see the dead animals all over the place?
Do you really?
Yeah, the seals, the sea otters. You see them just like they died right in front of me. It was...
You know, I think that's something everybody should see. There should be maybe films passed around in the schools to show you. I understand that concern of unemployment, but I think this goes beyond unemployment. This is something worse than unemployment. This is destruction of the planet.
Yes.
And if the company has to be destroyed to keep the planet a little bit safer, then perhaps we can find those people jobs somewhere else with a company that does care. Maybe another company can pick up the slack where Exxon leaves off, and for all time we'll be able to say Exxon was dismantled by the people of this country because it was not paying attention to the environment, to the needs of the people, to the future of the planet.
Yeah, but also there are other bigger problems. There's like the ozone layer. All the aerosols and all that crap. You don't see the hairspray companies going out of business or anything. Like, an oil spill is not as big as the ozone layer.
Well, I'm afraid in that part of the world it was devastating. There was also an oil spill in Antarctica, which had never been touched by any of this stuff before. The aerosols, yeah, that's something else. There seems to be some progress being made on that. There are laws being passed. It's slow. But again, yeah, it's the same thing. It's not enough being done. It's not moving quickly enough, and we shouldn't not pay attention to that. In place of this, we should be paying attention to all of it.
Yeah.
Because it's all going to affect us in the end. It's going to affect our kids.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying.
So I understand the jobs issue, but you see, that's always what's raised in front of us. Do you want jobs or do you want a clean environment? I think we can have both, and until we get people running these companies that care about the environment, we might have to suffer a bit of unemployment for a while. But I think the end result will be much better.
Yeah. Also, Mr. Rizzo, the Antichrist.
Sorry?
Hello?
I didn't hear that.
Yes, I have some really startling news I'd like to say over the air.
What's so startling about it?
George Bush and the Congress.
Oh, I think that's something that's been passed around before, but thanks for revealing it to us. Good evening.
Yeah, I think the environment is more important than these people's jobs, because you also got to figure, like, the time span of this, like, this global world of ours is way longer than these guys' jobs would even last.
Definitely right, and their kids are going to be around, their grandkids. Yeah, I just wonder, what's the world going to be like in just two generations if it goes at this rate? You know?
And I think the water, you know, it isn't as important as the ozone layer. I mean, it is the drinking water. It's also, like, producing the fish that these people are making their living off of.
Sure.
I think really what the main major concern is just the money factor is. They're worrying about the money in their pocket, and they're also worrying about the money that's going to cost to even clean up the spill and everything.
Right, and the money that they're thinking of, they're not thinking of money for future generations. They're thinking of money for themselves. So, they're not really going to care that much about about the future. They're going to care about the present and about how they can make the most out of the present. So obviously, if they if they're able to make more money and maybe destroy the environment a little bit, it's not going to affect them. It's going to affect the future generation sometime. They're going to have to deal with it, and these guys will be moldering in their graves somewhere. It's probably the only organic thing they ever created in their lives.
Yeah. They're just, like, trying to cater to just maybe the stockholders, so they all come in with big smiles on their faces Monday morning.
And the worst thing is that somehow we can't say these things without being viewed as unpatriotic or anti-capitalist or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, you know, these big corporations are not being watched closely enough. They're not being being monitored to see what they're doing to the environment. The environment is the biggest corporation of them all. And if it's destroyed, there's not much left for any of us to do, those with jobs, those without jobs.
Yeah, what I'm just interested in is, like, what eventually will they be doing in Japan when they have to, like, dispose of, like, all the sewage that they can't get rid of now? And they're just going to dump that into the water eventually, too. Because that's the only place they can put it, because they can't store it anywhere else.
Sure.
And see, like, eventually if that, like, washes up on the Pacific somewhere, like on California somewhere, then we'll see if anybody else complains about that.
Yeah, that's something. Foreign garbage. Let's see if we can get the old nationalist spirit stirred up when we see other people's garbage start floating around. I mean, if this was, if we were a nice, clean place and all these other countries were dumping garbage on us, I'm sure the mood here would be quite different. But since we're creating them, you know, it's not us creating it. It's just we've been lulled into this lifestyle where, you know, we're taught that it doesn't really matter and that everything will sort of be taken care of somehow. We tend not to care as much. And that's what's sad, because the rest of the world looks upon us in a very negative way. I mean, you see how Albania is. They don't even let us in the country. I'm wondering if the other countries might not follow suit.
Yeah, I think the major concern here is just the money. How much money can you make? That's more important than just any other values at all.
Sure. Yeah, it's not how much money you make. It's what you get out of life. And if you make some money along the way, fine. But you focus on that as the goal. You're going to miss all the other good things along the way. And there's so many of them.
And Exxon has done a good job at that, I must say.
Yeah, well, you know, Exxon isn't the only guilty one, but at the moment they're the most guilty, and I think we should not let them forget that.
Don't forget, or like, even our own health programs here, and they're just dumping their stuff out in the ocean also, you know. Not a major concern.
Nobody's immune, and I think we should, yell and scream whenever we find out something about this.
Yes.
If you need to yell and scream here, we're open for you.
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling. 632-6901, Parkham's brain damage, which is something we're all going to get if we let this situation continue, but feel free to talk about whatever else is on your mind. We don't just have to talk about depressing things like pollution and world destruction. We can talk about anything else that happens to be going on. Things like computers that improve our lives and make things all the faster. 7 minutes and 26 seconds. I can't believe that. You know, I thought it would be something like that. I thought maybe it would be double, but I didn't think it would be that long. And, you know, I wasn't trying to drag out that computer. I wasn't trying to make it take as long as possible. That's, you know, I never asked it for this information before, and I did what I thought I was supposed to do. I think the phone company would probably get a big kick out of this this new feature, because you stay on the phone so much longer, you know? Stay on the phone longer. And if you really hit the wrong key, it hangs up on you. You know, if you do something really stupid and ask for the wrong thing and you reach like a dead end in the menu, then you have to call back. This morning when I was trying to find out what train was leaving, I had to call something like 5 times. It hung up on me twice. So that's 5 calls in place of one, or none if I had the schedule in the first place. So just something to be aware of, you know? It's always good to know if things are getting better or worse. 632-6901. It's 20 minutes to 12. We have 20 minutes left. Good morning, or good evening, rather.
Yes, Eric.
Yes.
Brian, I'm calling from Holbrook.
How you doing?
I'm a first-time listener.
Are you?
Yes. I heard your show back in September once when you came back from vacation from, Europe.
Well, then you're not a first-time listener.
It's the second time I've called.
Okay.
Listened, actually.
All right.
And you talked about the digital phone links in Europe.
Yeah.
And that's what actually attracted me to your program. I stayed up the whole night and listened to you. Very interesting.
Uh-huh.
The environment I would like to talk about, that's a very serious concern of mine. On Long Island, the town boards, state legislatures, for some reason still want to continue a large amount of development, but development that is quote-unquote environmentally sensitive. I don't exactly understand what they actually mean by that.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know, because I read there was an Iceland master plan, which every town has, concerning development, and they actually state we're being environmentally sensitive, but over the years we'll be tearing out these woods and those woods. But we won't do them today, we'll just do them 6 years from now, so we can gradually build bigger roads so it can hold more cars, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I don't understand how that can be considered environmentally sensitive.
So we'll just destroy the planet a little slower and try to suck every ounce of oxygen out of it. And, well, you know, that sounds real constructive thinking there, I guess is what you call that.
I live at the corner of, near the corner of Sunrise Highway and Broadway Avenue.
Oh, I feel sorry for you. You live on that corner?
About half a mile as a crow flies from the corner, actually.
Well, crows don't fly around there, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's funny, because we have 120 acres behind our house, and they want to rip that out to put in this industrial park. Now,
we have to build industrial parks.
And people, you know, don't seem in the Holbrook area concerned about the environment. Oh, yeah, let them rip it down. You know, at least the kids won't do drugs back there or something.
Yeah, you know, that's what it is. Any patch of woods is instantly thought of as wasteland, you know. There's nothing there. It's just a bunch of trees and grass and
the developers,
and kids
it's like an obstacle
out
they
there.
Have to cross.
Uh-huh.
And if you come around by my house, any time of day, you hear this roar of cars.
Right.
On Sunrise Highway. It is just incredible. And when they rip those woods out, you can multiply that sound factor by, I'd say, 50%, 100%, maybe 200%.
Sure, because the trees act as a buffer.
They're, you know, it's terrifying what's happening.
Well, you know, what you say about your neighbor's lack of concern is something that you kind of get lulled into that. It's sort of inevitable that it's all going to be destroyed in the end anyway.
We're going to have this industrial building put up in our area, and the residents are fighting it right now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I kind of feel sorry for the developers in a way, how they're being fought. You know, that's their job, that's their income. But I found sort of an idea.
Wait 1 second. Now, where is it said that it's their job to build on every space of land? First of all, you know, I have a lot of trouble with the concept that land belongs to a certain person and he can put whatever he wants on it. I say, you know, you can put something on land if the land says it's okay. In what terms, if the land says it's okay, you study the land, you study what's around it and what the land can take. And obviously, we've reached a saturation point, so I don't think they have the right to make a profit off the land just because they have to own it.
There's strip shopping plazas.
Yeah.
Pizza shops, card shops, you know, they're going up all over the place, you know. It's so oversaturated.
They're going out of business all over the place, too.
Yeah, and I think it's the Long Island Association and the Long Island Builders Association, and I think it's the Long Island Business Association also. They're screaming. They want money. They want more. They want more buildings, more houses, so they can fill these vacancies.
Well, yeah, you got to bring in people to live in these places so that they'll go to all these stores that they create and vice versa.
I've also thought of an idea.
But, you know, one day we're going to run out of room, and I just wonder what's going to happen at that point when there's no more space.
It'll be a while before we run out of room.
It's going to happen, though. At this rate, it is going to happen, and what are we going to do then?
There are large amounts of parcels already been developed, like 20 years ago, which remain open.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, let's not have them rip down anything else anymore. Ban it totally. However, abandoned projects, already torn down woodlands. If you want to build it there.
Right.
And
that makes a lot of sense. Or build it on the ruins of a shopping center that's gone out of business.
Because we have, down by MacArthur Airport, there was a Channel Home Center that went up in Bohemia. And they had a few other buildings in there. And Channel went out of business because there was absolutely no need for a Channel there. Nobody went there. It was dead 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
All day. So they want to put these industrial buildings up in my area. Why not put them in there? You have a huge warehouse-like building. You can put your industrial complex in there. You have a lot of space for offices. It would be a hell of a lot cheaper. Put it in there. Why rip down these woods in our area?
Well, did you ask that question?
Well, I'm writing a letter to the Islip Town Board, you know, for consideration.
Write a letter there and write it to all your local newspapers.
I'm going to talk to other residents and see what they say.
Write it to your local newspapers, too, and get people behind you, because, believe me, a lot of people are concerned about this. You know, the way we speak, it might make it seem as if nobody cares, but it's not true. A lot of people do care out there. They just don't know where to go.
Yeah,
and the best way to do that is just to communicate your thoughts, call up radio talk shows, write letters to newspapers, write congressmen. When you write congressmen, it does make a difference, because they don't really get all that many letters. They get a lot of, you know, the same letter from many, many different people.
But they read a newspaper and they say, oh, yeah, I like what that person says. I'll say what he says.
Right.
They're in the same letter.
They have to pay attention, and you have every right to address them. Listen, I want to go to some more calls, but
hey, no problem.
Keep us
nice
updated.
Talking to you, though.
Keep us updated. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Sure, I'll do my best.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Rather an unfortunate expression, I suppose, but your neck of the highway or whatever. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening.
Oh, well, before you're talking about what's going to happen to us if all these oil spills keep on going,
uh-huh.
I just want to know where we come from. Do you believe in Darwin's theory of evolution, or do you believe in the Bible version?
I'd have to go with the Darwin theory.
Yeah?
At the moment.
Yeah, that's what I said.
We've evolved. We've evolved, but we can also de-evolve, you know?
Yeah, with all the oil spills, yeah.
But what does that have to do with it, though?
Well, I think if we keep on getting these oil spills, everything's going to get contaminated and everybody's going to die off, and the whole earth's going to die.
Right, but why did you ask me if I believed in Darwin or creationism?
Well, we were talking about it here, and I just wanted to see what you thought about it.
Uh-huh. You know, I think, though, that is an interesting point, because probably a lot of people that don't really care about this think that it's all going to somehow magically work out, you know, like God will come down and fix everything for us, you know, because he created us and he won't let us kill ourselves or die out.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, that's so ignorant, I think, because you're not taking any responsibility for your own actions.
Yeah.
And you're expecting the world to take care of itself when in actuality we've been entrusted with the care of the world. And we've got to take responsibility ourselves.
Yeah, because nothing's going to happen if we don't do nothing. We got to start working to keeping everything clean and everything. And if we don't, we're just going to die.
Sure. And every little bit counts, whether it's, you know, not throwing trash on the ground, boycotting those places that have plastic, you know, boycotting those companies that keep spilling oil everywhere they go. Those little things, they add up if enough people do them. And enough people will do them if enough people find out about them. And that's where communication comes in.
Yes.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot.
632-6901. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, this is Greg again from Medford.
Yeah.
Yeah, about tearing down the woods to make shopping centers. But it seems that every time they tear down the woods, all they do is they put in the same. You get a bagel store, you get a video store, and like you really don't need all those the same places in every complex.
You know, somebody should do I guess this would make a good thing for the Harper's Index, is how many pizza shops there are in Suffolk County. You know, I don't think you'd ever be able to find out, because the minute you counted it, there'd be another one opening somewhere or closing somewhere. But yeah, you're right. You know, if we're going to build all these things, let's at least have some character, some difference. You know, say, oh, well, we can go to Rocky Point because that's where they have buffalo wings, you know, or they only have pizza in Lake Grove or something like that. Just have a bit of difference, but not the same thing everywhere. You know, you got to have a bit of personality, I suppose.
What we should do is have everybody write in and count how many places you can rent Lethal Weapon 2 in your local neighborhood, and then you can get, like, sort of an idea.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it's, like, also, like, with just even town pickup with the garbage, how you're supposed to separate the garbage into three different things, and they end up three different bags, and they end up throwing it all in one truck to begin with, so it doesn't even get separated properly.
They don't separate them? I mean, is it a different color bag, at least?
Well, you're supposed to put it in three specific cans, but only one truck comes to pick it up.
Uh-huh.
So it just all goes into the back of that truck and it gets all...
So they don't give you special bags or boxes to put the stuff in. You can put it in any bag you want.
Yeah, mix and mingle it anyway.
So you're supposed to separate it, but one truck takes it all away. Well, maybe they have... Well, is there any way of labeling it yourself? I mean, you just have three cans out there. Do you have to label, you know, glass or paper or whatever? Or is it obvious which is which?
It doesn't make the difference which is which. It all goes into the same truck.
That's incredible. I'd like to know more about that. Because I know in Brookhaven, we have to separate the newspaper, and a different truck comes on a different day and takes that.
Yep.
But I don't know what goes on in other towns, but obviously not enough.
Yeah, because like my aunt's, you know, that's where I've seen it, was at my aunt's house and everything. That's over in Wisconsin or something.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
So it's just like where, like they say, the woods is like where the druggies go and everything, but they don't realize it's all just in the school itself. It's like you don't have to go into the woods to do the drugs. You just go out onto the blacktop and play handball.
You know, we have such an amazing way of dealing with the drug problem in this country. You know, people hang out in the woods and do drugs. Let's tear down the woods. Anything but deal with the problem directly. You know?
It's right in the schools. And the way they deal with the drug problem is the principal just turns his head and says, "Not here, folks."
Yeah, that's a microcosm, I think. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
Talk to you soon. The program is Brain Damage. We have 9 minutes left, and if you want to get your calls in, well, you better do it now. 632-6901, area code 516, and let's hear what's on your mind. Good evening.
Hi. Now I don't know if I got enough time to...
Oh, there's a voice I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna read a small article, but now it doesn't look like there's enough time.
Well, you know, instead of reading a small article, I prefer to hear what you have to say.
Well, the thing is, I have the bad habit of coming across as a fanatic.
Well, yeah, that may be true, but this is one of the rare occasions where I can actually understand what you're saying. You must be on a good phone.
No, the usual phone.
Well, you're in a quiet room. You're in a very, very small room, it sounds like.
I turned off everything this time.
Yeah?
Well, I was going to... Ellen Goodman had something in Newsday that said what I've been saying, but she came across, you know, her rhetoric is better than mine.
Oh, she's really neat. I like her smile.
Well, I really don't... I don't always agree with her, but... hey, some of the things you said tonight... Boy, I wish I was there to pat you on the back.
Yeah, I was going on a roll, wasn't I?
The religion thing with the God coming down with his magic wand and everything. You know, I've been saying that for years, you know, like, oh, yeah, we could be as irresponsible as we want, you know, and then don't worry about it. That was really good that you realized that.
It's hocus-pocus stuff, you know. I mean, the whole God business is so much more intricate than that if you're going to get into it. But I just hate simplicity with things like that, you know.
So you don't want me to read this?
Well, why don't you summarize it for us?
Well, it's hard to summarize this, but...
Well, obviously you've read it. You understand what it says.
Well, all right. I guess the first paragraph would be the heading of it is like what everybody's talking about, but nobody comes right out and says it because I don't think they have the guts. I'm really one of the only people...
What, is this hemorrhoids or something?
No, you know. I mean about population. Okay, here. I'll just read the first paragraph.
Oh, wait. Is this the thing that says in something like 20 years the population is going to quadruple? I read that in the paper earlier this week. And you know, the thing that hit me, right?
Yeah.
I read that, then I came over here to Stony Brook to do something.
Yeah.
I just thought about it. Where in the world are all these people going to park?
Well, I really...
I mean, come on, where? There's no space.
Well, I don't think that we'll make it that far because...
But we don't think about these things.
He uses the analogy that the earth is like a camel and we're the straws.
Yeah, but you see, we don't think about these things because, you know, we think, yeah, 10 billion people, wow, there's a lot of people, but it's a finite amount of space, right? And if there's 10 billion people as opposed to however many there are now, I guess it's 20 billion we're talking about. Since there's 4 billion now, it's going to quadruple or something. Odds are a lot of them are going to come here to Stony Brook, and there's just only that many spaces, and that applies everywhere, you know? In the streets of New York, they're all going to be riding the trains. I mean, where are they going to go? Where are we going to put them?
Well... I've been saying that for I don't know how long. I've been saying that since high school, but...
And since you've been saying that, do you know how many more people there are to listen to you?
No, I've talked to people at demonstrations and abortion clinics, and I've tried to talk to them about birth control, and forget it. You have got no idea how closed their minds are. It's pathetic. I wish that there was another planet that I could go to get away from those people, because I got to live on the same planet they live on.
That would be good if there was a choice, yes. I definitely agree with that. There should be a choice.
Well, there should be a choice, but the thing is, birth control is what is causing the problem of population in a way, because none of the politicians want to come right out and say it. She mentions that.
Don't you mean lack of birth control?
The people problem. People, the growing number of us.
Right.
You know, it's just so many. She writes it in such a nice way without coming across as a hysterical fanatic like I do because of my lack of education.
Yeah, but this is radio. You need hysterical fanatics.
Yeah, well, I've said that, but you hang up on a lot of hysterical fanatics.
Right, and people love it when I do that.
I miss Mr. Radio.
No, that's not going to work. We only have 5 minutes left, and he's not going to call in anyway.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it says here that the days when presidents, politicians, or citizens could cast themselves as advocates of the environment without also being advocates of population limits are gone. Family planners and environmentalists both talk about the carrying capacity of the earth.
Uh-huh.
So, You see, Bush, he took money away from the United Nations, from the, what's it called, the Population Crisis Committee, because they want to spread birth control. But he doesn't, he's against that because he thinks the pro-lifers will jump down his throat. And I've talked to pro-lifers, and they think completely opposite of what you think, where you say that they think that God will come down if everything gets a little bit too bad, and God will come out of the heavens and say, okay, you guys screwed up the world, I'm going to fix it up, you know, don't worry about a thing. That's childish. That's totally fantasy thinking.
Well, you know, I always have a problem saying that one particular group of people thinks a certain way only. I'm sure there's diversity within that group, but
they believe that.
Well, I mean, a lot of people do believe that, and that's what I have a problem with.
They believe that, but believe me, they believe they connotate the denotation of the Bible. They take it out of context constantly and totally, you know, the Bible is nothing. It's a nice book. It's got a lot of nice things in it that you can learn to treat your fellow man, but you can't take it literally. It's just another book amongst a lot of other books. It's just another religion amongst a lot of religions. It's not the one and only way, and they believe it's the only way. And that's one of the things that's helping to make things the way they are today.
Well, you know, that's one of the common binds of just about all religions, is that their way is the only way and all other ways are wrong. And, that, you know, that arrogance is what always gives me a problem with religion. It's the same arrogance that a lot of atheists have, too, by the way. So, you know, I'm not in their camp either.
Yeah.
I just don't think anybody has all the answers. I mean, I know nobody has all the answers. And we just have to start listening to other people, too, and people that say completely different things, people that have completely different lifestyles. And I think that's why we're all sort of mixed together, if there's any kind of purpose in this whole mess.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, all right, maybe the Bible isn't the only way, but the thing of it is, as far as the Christianity is concerned, in my mind, it's a religion of society. Religions of a long time ago and mythologies were a religion of nature. So we weren't out of touch with nature. We didn't put ourselves above nature, above everything else. It seems to me, from what I'm getting from many religions, is we're putting ourselves on a pedestal and exploiting everything. And that's the problem.
Well, I mean, that's not just true of religion, is it? That's true of all kinds of things. Well, you think you're above everyone else.
Well, you see what I mean. I mean, they say that, you know, human beings are the only ones that have souls. In the meantime, monkeys and apes and certain other animals have a sizable IQ. Not as high as ours, but they do have an IQ. So where does that put them in the perspective of their so-called God's eye?
Sure. And, you know, That kind of belief that humans are the only ones with souls makes it a lot easier to, you know, to torture the animals a bit, you know, and
and
exploit them.
Well, we use the animals to cure diseases, which is very nice. It takes a lot of intelligence. The man is intelligent enough to come up with these cures for these diseases, but man isn't wise enough to control the people that are now saved by it. You're saving a lot of lives, but now what do you do with them?
Good point, and a good point to end on. I want to thank you for calling.
Yeah, nice talking to you. You brought up a lot of good points tonight, Eric.
All right, well, maybe we'll bring up even more next week, eh?
Yeah, you're one of the tops on my list after this.
Oh, boy. Well, I'll have to see the rest of that list.
All right, I'll see you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
And thanks to everybody else that called. Sorry to those we didn't get to. It's just about midnight now. And Raz is here with Power Surge. Yeah, we're...
There's no such thing, you know.
No such thing as what? Power Surge?
No, there's no such thing as de-evolution.
What about Devo and all that? No?
Devo.
Come on. We can't unevolve if we want to?
You only progress.
Well,
evolve.
I'll bring in a few people next week and you can explain them to me then.
This show is excellent, folks. Keep listening to it, I'm telling you.
Well, don't listen anymore because it's over. But the show coming up is excellent, and the show after that I'm sure will be excellent too.
And gotta think and question everything.
Yeah, question us.
Fundamental and basis of knowledge.
Yeah. Hey, you're being very philosophical tonight. Are we going to have a philosophical mental show?
Philosophical, yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
We'll have one with lots of big words. Anyway, brain damage is over for this week, folks. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks for calling. And thanks for just being you, I suppose. I don't know. We'll be back again next week from 10 to 12. And who knows what we'll do then. I'm sure it'll be fun, though. Good night. Power. A position of ascendancy over others. Surge. To rise and fall actively. Power. Physical might. Mental or moral vigor. Surge. A sweeping onward like a wave of the sea or emotion. Power, force or energy used to do work, the time rate at which work is done. Surge, a transient, sudden increase of current in an electrical circuit. Power surge.
Caution, this album may be considered offensive.
Undefined.
Power is the most valuable word in the world.